hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. X-Go, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? X-Go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. With both desktop and mobile access at any time, head to the BetOnline today and use our promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus off your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Welcome back to the next episode of Motor City Metrics. I am here with you and Chris. Raj will be joining us shortly here. Go ahead, follow us on X, subscribe to us on YouTube, like the live stream. We're available on whatever platform you listen to podcasts. We have for YouTube viewers, we have a new design this week. Probably next episode we'll have stuff on the right saying the topics we'll go through and some fancy graphics at the bottom, but for now just bear with us. Where do you guys want to start this week? You guys want to start with the White Sox or you guys want to start with Oakland?
Well, let's just remind everybody that the Tigers are obviously, if you look at Twitter, the worst 108-win pace team of all time. Well, there you go. They got that going for them.
Yeah, you know, it's been a strange first week plus of games. You know, there was a lot of optimism after that 6-1 start, and now they've dropped 3 of 4, or is it 2 of 3? I don't know.
2 of 3.
Two in a row.
Was it 5-1 start then? I don't know. In any event, people are all bummed out because they couldn't beat the lowly A's, and they forget that baseball is baseball. but I understand the frustrations a little bit because it's the same kind of issues that we've seen for the several years, that the offense just kind of looking lifeless against these no-name pitchers or, you know, guys that other teams are absolutely destroying. But you know, it's early in the year. You know, we could play a game like going down and talking about every player and like, are you actually concerned about him or is it just whatever? And I feel like probably 9 out of 10 players would be like, yeah, give it more time.
Exactly.
That was going to be my first question. Your initial thoughts on the offense. And yeah, I don't think we should break down every player because we're 9 games into the season. But after a little over a week, are you more confident or less confident in the offense as you were coming into the season?
You know, many times this winter, right? I was fairly optimistic. I gave an optimistic prediction this year. I said 87 wins and win the division. So they got some work to do, but it's a good start. 9-6-3. But many times this winter, one of the trepidations I had was, and I'll go back to it again, they were 28th in runs, and their solution was to add Mark Canha. Okay, so when you do that, that means a lot of your internal options need to improve, and the rookies need to hit the ground running. Obviously, Austin Meadows has not hit the ground running. Cole Keith has looked okay-ish, right? Not great, but not bad. And a lot of the other guys who they're expecting some power from really haven't done much yet. And the guys who have hit are the guys with no power. So it's just one of those things. I think they just got to sort themselves out. Hopefully when the weather gets a little warmer, Things start to happen offensively. But hey, they're 6-3, and if you're 6-3 and you're not hitting, you should actually be kind of optimistic about that.
Yeah, you know, I don't feel any different really about the offense. I mean, we could talk about, you know, they're kind of bottom third already in all the offensive stats. Actually, they currently right now are 27th in runs scored. Here's a fun fact for you. Oakland is 26th, the Mets are 28th, and the White Sox are 30th.
Nice.
So yeah, maybe everything's a giant mirage right now. But no, I mean, for the most part, you know, I have some concerns, right? Like Spencer Torkelson didn't do anything in spring training, and he had that one game with a couple doubles, right? And yep. But an awful lot of lazy flyouts that we've seen from him. His swing seems to be broken, not broken, but not where it needs to be, I should say. And you know, it felt like that with Riley Green too. You can tell when Riley Green's not swinging it right because he's hitting those weak grounders to second base. That's what he does when he's not feeling it. But he's got 3 home runs already. And I believe in Riley Green's offensive ability. I think he's going to be just fine. It's just going to take some time. And I feel the same way about Colt Keith. We've talked about this a number of times, that this is just his pattern. It's been his pattern since low A, where it takes him a little while to feel things out, figure out what pitchers are doing against him. And to Hugh's point, he's staying afloat. And I think surprising people with how solid to above average he's been on defense. And you know, he's faster and like... So he's making himself a valuable player even while he's figuring things out. And I think you can sort of say the same for Parker Meadows. I know there's some concern there. I mean, I just don't think he's going to hit like 040 for the year. Like he's walking a fair amount. He's striking out more than you'd expect. He's chasing fastballs above the zone. He needs to get that in order. But as he's another guy with when he gets on the speed and the defense, we've seen it already, that he's going to provide some value. It's just nobody's really hitting right now consistently, so it just feels like the offense is completely useless. And I think at some point, some of these balls are going to stop or start dropping, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, I was looking into Riley Green a little bit, and his BABIP is only 100 on the season.
Yeah,
and he's a notoriously high BABIP guy. I mean, you probably won't get to 350 again this year, but I mean, some of those grounders have to start sneaking through, right?
Yeah, you would assume so, because he's a guy who traditionally hits the ball very hard. And like, again, when he's not right, he's hitting this kind of soft grounders to second. But when he is right, he's hitting hard line drives all over the field, you know, pulling the ball down the right field line, hitting liners to left field, hitting the ball out of the park, you know, left field, right field, center. So it's just, you know, and it's cold for the most part, and we've seen this, right? It just sometimes it takes guys a little while to get dialed in. So I don't know. And again, we're talking like this is a 6-3 team, right? Like this is just fine. This is we did the one thing that we wanted for them to not do this year was get off to a really slow start. Now things can change. You know, maybe they're 6-10 a week from now, and we go, oh boy. But yeah, I just think that fans are, I don't know, we're a fickle bunch, I suppose. You know, 6-3 is not good enough. We need to be 9-0 and beating everybody 10-0.
I'd be interested to know what 7 last year. So,
well, there you go. It'll be fun to know what the fans, you know, all the commentators that we interact with a lot, and we're part of them. You know, and I don't want to talk like we're above them by any stretch, people on Twitter, because I'm out there. But I'd love to know if the Tigers are winning slugfests. You know, if they're winning a lot of these games 11-9, would people be happier? Or
I think so.
Yeah, I think they might be too.
I think we've talked about it before, and I just feel that there's something kind of hopeless about playing low scoring games every day. You're like, ah, yeah. And you know, for a while there, that the Tigers just kept coming up with those big hits late in games. It was like the sixth inning on was their time to shine. You know, Riley Green had a couple big home runs late, and you know, getting to closers and getting into those extra innings where they could really do damage. But
Hobby had two big.
Yeah. Colt Keith had the big hit against the Mets. It's but I don't know. I mean, I think they kind of built this team that way, right? They were hoping to keep games low scoring and maybe get into another team's bullpen. That's I suppose the one thing that's been a little bit disappointing is we've seen a couple of games now where just the plate appearances aren't very good. There's kind of aggression that doesn't seem warranted.
Yeah.
And just multiple times, I think both of the first A's games, it was like they were into like sixth inning while the opposing pitcher had like 65 pitches and like one strikeout. So it was just like they weren't getting blown away. They were just, you know, making weak contact. So I don't know. There's, it's an offense is a work in progress. I am a little bit curious about people. I feel like people might be a little bit upset about these free agent pitchers too. If we want to touch on that later.
Yeah. I was going to pull up the fan graphs. Someone mentioned Baez is at negative 11 OPS plus now. Mm-hmm. And I was going to bring up the WRC plus scoreboard. But even one game, I mean, Riley Green started today with an 81. And then after the home run, he's back up to 130. Mm-hmm. So I feel like paying attention to plus stats right now won't be, will just be yeah. more of a headache than it's worth.
One game leads to wild fluctuations this time of year. So I just think that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to move on to Kenta Maeda, so.
Oh, I was going to say, and again, I always preface with the obvious that I'm not a hitting coach, right? But Riley Green's, when he's going bad, it seems to me he just looks like he has a, where he flies open early with his lead shoulder and he pulls off that thing a lot. And, you know, when he is going at his best is when he's looping those line drives the opposite way on pitches that he can't drive. You know, he definitely stays in there on those. So hopefully I'm right, and he gets back to that. And for Torkelson, I've been operating under the theory that it seems like he's getting on top of the ball too much. And either driving it into the ground if he gets the top half of the ball or popping it up when he gets the bottom half of the ball. And I saw one swing today that he kind of caught it toward the end of the bat, and he got to the edge of the warning track. And that one, to me, looked like the swing from last year, where he had a bit of an uppercut to it, and he really stayed behind it, and he wasn't able to quite drive it because he just missed it by an inch. So it's a long season. Hopefully he gets cranked up here at some point. You got to believe something will shake him loose.
Yeah, I mean, you know, baseball's hard. We know that. It's very hard, and it's very hard to predict things from one year to the next, right? Like we like to think that things are going to carry over and somebody's just going to keep getting better. But at the same time, we've seen evidence that Spencer Torkelson can hit big league pitching. He hit 30 home runs last year, you know, and Riley Green has hit for, you know, the majority of his pro career. And so, yeah, it's just both of those guys just seem to be tinkering with their swings right now. And I don't know, we've seen, you know, Mark Canha has been a steady offensive presence. He's done, I think, what they wanted him to. It's just that, you know, it's not as beneficial right now necessarily because not everybody else is hitting. And I'll be honest, I think Kerry Carpenter's playing a little less than I expected early on in the season. They're really using him in almost entirely strict platoon role. Mm-hmm. You know, he did get it at bat against a lefty the other day, and he promptly grounded into a double play. So that, you know, you got to do what you got to – when you get a chance, you got to make something happen. And so that's been a mild surprise, but I don't know. Other than that, yeah, I mean, there's – you know, Carson Kelly's been a solid offensive piece. Urshela has done some things. It's just really, I think everybody would feel a lot better if Meadows and Torkelson were producing it and Colt Keith started to pick it up.
Actually, I guess before we get to Maeda, Canha, one of the offensive pickups, and then Kelly, who was retained, the two veteran guys are the ones who have been doing most of the damage. Should we applaud Scott Harris for possibly picking the right pieces to fit into this puzzle, or should he, like, is that a testament to why he didn't go out and get more because he picked the veterans he wanted and thought the lineup needed, or should he have added more bats? I guess we won't know for 40-60 games, but something to think about.
Well, I mean, I'm looking, if you look at the plus stats, it's way too early, but you got the top five are Canha, Urshela, McKinstry, Kelly, and Green. So, yeah, I mean, it's just so early that, as you guys said, you know, somebody can go 3-for-3 and completely change their offensive season around right at this point. So, yeah, it's just been, it's frustrating. You see it happen with teams. It's early in the year. It's cold. They're all trying to figure something out. And, you know, some people talk about hitting being contagious and not hitting being contagious. And I do think there comes a time when maybe you're trying to get a, you know, spark the offense and you get out of your comfort zone a little bit and you know, you're swinging at pitches you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. They've got, you know, got some more interesting games coming up.
Raj is working behind the scenes right now and changing the layout, so it's not your screen bugging out. It's us. So I guess moving on to Kenta Maeda, first start against the White Sox, 3.1 innings, six earned runs. What was it? Was it two or three home runs? I think it was three home runs.
Three
home runs. And then he kind of rebounded the next start against Oakland, 5.2 innings pitched. Only one home run, only two hits, but four walks. So even then, he wasn't showing elite stuff. Any first impressions on Kenta Maeda?
Well, you know, he's been up and down the last few years. He had the COVID season where he was dominant, where he got to face the AL Central pretty much only. And I think he was second in Cy Young or third or something. And he's been up and down since then. I think we're going to see a lot of that up and down. I think he'll have some great starts where he's twirling that thing and he's commanding his slider and he's keeping everybody off balance. And he'll go, you know, seven innings, allow one run, and we're like, ooh. And he's going to have days like the other day where it's just a little off. And he doesn't have the overpowering stuff. If he is a little off, he's going to give up three, four runs probably in an outing.
Yeah, you know, he just looks to me like a, you know, he's a touch and feel guy, right? And mm-hmm. We saw the same sort of thing with Erod in his first couple starts with the Tigers 2 years ago, where he was getting hit harder than he was supposed to. And then eventually he got the command dialed in and he was just painting corners. And I saw I think Maeda was a little gun shy in his second start. You know, he was really trying to get guys to chase and he wasn't, you know, putting the ball in the zone as much as he needs to. I think he'll get that dialed in. And when it gets warmer, he'll probably, you know, be the kind of, you know, I guess he's technically their number two starter, but I don't know. I was never really expecting more than like number four starter production from him, right? Like you just want like a four, some ERA, like 4.3, 4.5, somewhere like that. And you know, give you a 5-6 innings a start. I am also mildly concerned about Jack Flaherty, particularly just with his fastball command. It has not been there in his first two outings and it's tough to pitch, like that. You know, he's fastball, curveball, slider guy, right? And if you don't have the fastball, then it's hard to get those other pitches to work. We see that with Alex Lang all the time, right? Like, so yeah. I don't know. I don't know. That was always an interesting one to me, and I'll be curious to see how he comes out of this.
Jerry, I can't find it on Twitter, but I believe he tweeted out that Maeda for his career has close to an 8 ERA during April and May. So
not ideal
to, yeah, not ideal, something to keep track of as the season goes on. Flaherty had the exact opposite of Maeda, where he had a pretty good first start and then obviously got whipped by the A's today. His first start was, I mean, I guess what we perfectly want from him, six innings pitched, four hits, one walk, or sorry, no walks, one home run, seven strikeouts. So, I guess that's kind of the peak of what we want from him. Six innings mm-hmm. pitched, seven strikeouts, and then today he's showing why the Cardinals gave up on him.
That three-run inning where he gave up the homer to Geloff, he was almost out of that inning. I mean, he had some bad luck, and then he got ahead 0-2 on Geloff, and he put that ball. That thing was 4 inches above the strike zone. And Geloff tomahawked that thing out. That was actually pretty impressive. I thought that was a pretty nice 0-2 pitch most of the time up above the zone. And just bad luck that you know, that kid put a hell of a swing on it and knocked it out.
Hello, Raj. Welcome, Raj, to the show.
Let me just first and foremost, good evening, everybody. And I want to apologize for my Twitter behavior in answering trolls all weekend. I think I was just been a very dark mood based off the events that happened last week. You know, so I think I was just kind of, you know, in a mood, if you will. So I normally don't respond to trolls, you know, ragging on 19-year-old kids and all that stuff and all that. But yes, this offense is atrocious. We've warned everybody about it. It's common knowledge. And what happened, Ryan Kreidler, by the way, he got hit in the hand. By the way, the Iowa Cubs can – I don't know what the hell the Iowa Cubs are doing, but literally they hit four – was it five Toledo Mudhens in the last three or four days?
There was a lot. I was at – you know, I've been at two of the games. There were a lot of hit batters by both clubs, but more by the iCubs toward the Mudhens. I saw the Kreidler play. I was right there, and I was actually sitting pretty close. I think he was hurting more than he let on. He was making quite the face. The bad part was he checked his swing. So his hand, it wasn't a glancing blow off his knuckle or something. He had his hand kind of out there exposed. So, I'm not too, I'm not too encouraged by what we might hear about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Malloy got hit earlier in the week and came out of the game, and then Kreidler got hit and is now on the IL. And today, Eddie's Leonard did not get hit, but he, fell down awkwardly after swinging. Looks like he pulled something or tweaked something in his midsection, his abdomen. So I would expect him to go in the IL soon too. So yeah, it was a tough week, but this is, I mean, you know, we don't need to get into the epidemic of arm injuries across baseball right now, but you know, this March and April are generally two of the biggest months for injuries because it's just, you know, you're ramping up and it's cold and things get pulled and things get snapped and broken. But yeah, so it was a tough week down there for Toledo, and as you know, not to get too deep into this, but having watched most of the minor leagues all weekend, a lot of the offenses down there look a lot like the Tigers right now. Everybody's just off a little bit. Like Justice Bigby he's got an OPS of like 350 right now. He's swinging and missing and tons of breaking balls, which he didn't do last year. Max Clark, I mean, that's what Rod was alluding to there. Max Clark does not look great right now. He looks like he can't hit a fastball to save his life. Yep. It's three games. Everybody needs to settle down, but you know, it's early in the season.
Yeah, and that's where I have a hard time understanding where people want to just point out they're in the bottom of the league in offensive categories. They're 6-3. Mm-hmm. They have a one run differential. It's not, look, losing to Oakland is pathetic. Don't get me wrong. Or the A's, what the hell you want to call them? I mean, properly now they're the Vols. They're the A's. The Sacramento A's of Las Vegas. It is. Maybe it's just what happened last week.
Sacramento A's of Las Vegas. Self.
Yeah. Three continent. Yeah. Three prospects and a vowel.
Yeah.
I look at this and maybe I'm just sitting there going, okay. Meanwhile, I will say this, the Guardians right now have a run differential for plus 32. If you're going to tell me that the Guardians are going to be 72, I'm not surprised they're 72 because they have good pitching, but the offense didn't expect that. I mean, they spanked the Mariners. They had no problem with the Twins in the game that was postponed today. I got this vibe on Twitter that everything was horrible and the Tigers are in last place or the 1-8. Did I miss the fucking boat? Sorry, my language. And it carries over from, by the way, I got to give a shout out to Sean Belizean. Sean Belizean, and you check out their podcast. They've done a really good job of, I know they're just starting out and I'm drawing a blank right now.
Unsyndicated?
Unsyndicated. And they have a series of, thank you, Chris, doing some really good stuff there. And they're starting off their own YouTube channel. And Sean is somebody that has given me plenty of time, mic time. And it was one, like a guy I grew up listening to. So this is pretty cool. And either way, I swore on there, so I don't get too comfortable with swearing because I don't want to. But either way, the Off the Air Pod is one of their pods on their YouTube channel, and so check it out. Go on YouTube and subscribe to it. But no, it's and Troy, I like the way you said we're establishing a good pitching and defense. The bullpen is good. The starting staff could be a little better, but again, I just this dread. It's just really, really early in a season. If somebody said, I said the 40 games is a good metric. Well, I guess I have to wait 40 games for foul pop-outs and ground outs. Like you're freaking out over 9 games. And you're going to tell me that I shouldn't have to wait till 40 games. That is the standard. Yeah, if we all got excited about like last year, the Pirates got off to a really good start. Remember how everybody was the Pirates this and Pirates that. And then by the end of the year, they were out of contention. Give it some time. Yes, this offense, yes, they're missing center cut fastballs. That's easy to point out. And it's awful. But did anybody, no one, but here's the thing. What blew my mind about the whole, again, maybe it's just, again, the last couple of days or so, about all this. Oh, that's not what I want to do at all. Oh, that's weird. Sorry. I've been playing with the settings all day, and I'm getting carried away with it. So, this is what happens when, anyway, I just don't, it's just saying, like, I think that, and that's what it is. I think it's been a long week, for our friend, John Kloss. And I just got a little fired up a little about it. And also, here's another thing. Too. If you're bowling with somebody, and you're bowling in a league, and you're telling somebody to hurry up, shut the F up, okay? Just do yourself a favor and shut up. And don't run up when somebody's bowling. It's rude and wrong. Sorry. Go ahead. So
a universal truth we can apply to every aspect of our life. When you mentioned the Pirates, I actually was thinking about John, because I was going back looking for videos of John last year, and he was very adamant that the Pirates were off to a fake start last year, and he was right. And we went out there onto his service on Thursday, and obviously it was a giant bummer, but there was a ton of love there, and he impacted a lot of people's lives in a relatively short time, and so it was nice to meet some of his people. And little punk, I didn't know he could play the guitar or sing.
Yeah,
they played a video of him playing. We found out what it was. It was a Ed Sheeran song.
Ed Sheeran song, yeah.
They played a clip of him the whole song. It was very nice. But in John's memory, I do think we should say settle down. like the good teams aren't this good and the bad teams aren't this bad right now, except maybe the White Sox.
So yeah, the Detroit Tigers started 2-9 last year. I don't know if anyone remembers that.
I do. Pepper Trump remembers.
And they're 6-3 right now. Anyways, at the 40-game mark last year, do you remember what they were at? 19-21. They were two games under 500 after starting off 2-9. So it's a long season.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, okay, here's where everybody was talking about the offense. And this is where I was kind of like, so I was looking at how many runs they scored last year during that stretch. They scored one less run, and they were 2-9. Or I'm sorry, 2-7. Sorry, 2-7. 2-7 with one less run.
No,
I mean, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you could look at that two different ways, right? You could look at it like they've done nothing to improve the offense, or the pitching is better, or I just think that the guys who are not performing right now are not going to continue to play this poorly, right? Like, it's one thing when it's Jonathan Scope and Miguel Cabrera and, whomever else, Nick Maton from last year. Now, maybe it turns out that Parker Meadows just won't be able to hit. Like, I'm fairly confident that he'll be decent enough. And I'm a big believer in Colt Keith. And beyond that, like, you got to hope that Torkelson can do something. We saw it last year. Green's not going to hit 140 or whatever. So it's going to come around. It's just a bummer right now.
OBK, that's a good point. Or the competition, the first nine games were worse. They played Tampa, Houston, but then no one expected them to get swept by Boston. I mean, as you recall, the series at home against Boston, they lost 6-3, 14-5, and 4-1 to a Boston team that on paper was worse than the Tigers. So there was, I mean, they did win two out of three. They did win the two game set two out of three against Houston, which people weren't expecting. I don't know. It's just I look at some of the early storylines this week, and when somebody mentioned that Colt Keith can't hit, I don't know, maybe that also triggered a couple things too. Like,
well, I mentioned in the Discord that I was listening to the radio for the first time in a long time on the way to John's service, and there was a doubleheader, right? And so they had the 97.1 radio host was talking about, like, it's obvious that Colt Keith can play defense. We've seen it, but the fans were really wondering if he could hit. And I was like, what's going on here? Like, and I forget that on sports radio, you just say what you've seen immediately and make that the universal truth. So I don't know. It just kind of cracked me up a little bit.
What is the lettuce jacket pot? Okay. I'm just going to, I don't know what that comment is. Lettuce Jacket Podcast.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. Yeah, the Pirates. Yeah, here and here's yeah, Corey coming in with the Pirates are 8-2 again. The Pirates are off to a really good start, and the Tigers are playing them next. And so the Mets guy. Okay, all right, that's who that was. Okay,
that was an early highlight of the season, I would say.
Yeah,
the interview with the weirdo on the Mets game.
Yeah. Speaking of, by the way, I don't know if you guys saw yesterday. I think the weirdest thing. I think there was these guys got dressed up like oil barons.
Yeah,
Johnny King was talking to him. I gotta find that. I'm gonna find that audio or find that video. But it is by far. I mean, Johnny King has done a really good job this year. If there's the TV broadcast itself too has been very entertaining early on.
Has it?
I don't think it has been.
Johnny King's been fine, and I saw the bit with the guys with the oil men from Calgary or whatever, right? They were pretty funny.
They were from Metro Detroit, as I've come up.
Right, yeah, but they were posing as oil men from Calgary.
Right. So there's some sort of an oil conference or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This weekend, I gotta say, and it's a work in progress, and it'll get better, I'm sure. Benetti and Gibby, not exactly. You know, they're a little oil and water right now. they need some work. I don't think either one gets the other's sense of humor yet. You know, where I think Gibby is probably comfortable with Shep. So they're going to have to work on that. I think Monroe's had a better time with Benetti.
I think, you know, somebody, my wife mentioned that. She goes, does Kirk Gibson hate Jason Benetti? And I was like, oh, it's just Kirk being Kirk Gibson. And then I was listening to it. I'm like,
you know, it's a little bit like he was way back in the day with Josh Lewin, right? Where there was a little bit of tension there. But I do think, and it's unfortunate that, you know, Benetti's just very quick and always, like, you know, joking and you know, sarcastic. And Gibby just can't be that quick anymore, right? He does, he can't, you know, unfortunately, because of the Parkinson's, he can't do it. So you end up with these kind of awkward pauses the whole time. And it's just, it's not necessarily a great product right now. Like you said, they may be able to figure out how to make it work, but it's not. It was a little bit. It's a work in progress, right?
I thought opening day was great with Simo thrown in there. I think the three of them meshed well together. But Gibby and Benetti, I muted it and started listening to music. It was not good.
Yeah, it was, you want that? You want stuff like this. This is what I like. Just seeing more of Andrew Chafin, please. That was very cool.
So they're trying to make a thing out of the stash guys in the bullpen too, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be a running gag, I'm sure. That should be the best thing now. All the bullpen guys in Toledo are going to grow a mustache. See if they can get up there, join the crew.
Well, I mean, you know, I think Raj mentioned the bullpen, but yeah, like, you know, Foley, Chafin, Miller, Holton, they've all been really good. I mean, Lang's had a couple hiccups, right? That's I guess what we expected. And as same with Vest and Fido gave up, you know, that was just kind of, you know, I don't think in most circumstances they wouldn't have used Fido there in the ninth in game two of the doubleheader, but you know, it was just kind of out of necessity.
That wasn't even a bad pitch to Pete Alonso. I think that's genuinely one of the times where you have to tip your cap to a 50 home run hitter. And
yeah,
as he went, he kind of extended his arms on that too, right? I mean, he really, yeah. So it's, what are you? Yeah, you're right. What are you gonna do? I mean, it is Pete Alonso, and there's a couple things that, I mean, we're not gonna be too stat heavy today because it's kind of a shorter podcast. But your bullpen, congratulations, your bullpen has the second best K per nine in all the league, next to Cleveland, and they haven't, you know, they're busting a FIP out of 3.20. ERA at 1.11. And you're going to sit there. I mean, look, the offense, again, self-explanatory. The offense is crap. I get it. But still, I mean, it's just, that's the part where you just go, okay, then can we talk about the bullpen numbers? No. This is why I bitch about the offense. All right. Bitch away. It's bad. I mean, look, the thing that really drove me nuts about today was, I just have to say this, is that when it was, what was it? The amount of pop-ups, the second base, the infield pop-ups. I mean, you could have done a drinking game today with all the infield pop-ups. Am I right about that? It just seems like there was so many. It just, no one could get it. Just, that was frustrating.
Well, you know, it's wild because I remember seeing Joe Boyle down in it's Joe Boyle, right?
Yeah.
The pitcher today for Notre Dame. You know, I remember he couldn't throw strikes at all, and seeing him in the minors. I thought he used to be with the Reds. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's a guy that it just feels like you could just wait him out. Now, he's always had awesome stuff, but he's just never been able to locate it. And it's like, okay, just wait him out. And then they didn't really. I mean, there were some people who got walks and got hit by pitches or whatever, but like whenever it was close to the strike zone, they were swinging and helping him out, and it's just frustrating.
Didn't he throw more balls than strikes today?
Yeah.
I think he might have.
Yeah, it was 50-50 at the best.
But the stat that really, to me, was kind of like the giant. And it's so funny too, when I was reading this stat, and Evan Woodbury of MLI posted it earlier, and I was just utterly stunned by the stat, because it used to be when the Tigers go to Anaheim and play.
Mm-hmm.
So the last time the Tigers won a home series against the A's was April 25th through 28th, 2016. Since then. The Tigers, ladies and gentlemen, if I get this right, are 4-21. 4-21 against Oakland at Comerica Park since then. That's the Tigers on the road against the Angels.
There's nothing much to say, right? Like, baseball is a strange thing. As fans, we expect them to win, and you wonder if the players themselves think, all right, well, this team's no good, so we should go out there and then you don't prepare. I don't know. It could just be some of that strange, random stuff that happens in baseball.
One thing I wanted to bring up tonight, and again, it's based off seeing him for 9 at-bats or so, but you know who was swinging the bat pretty well for Toledo? Keston Hira.
Yeah.
Keston Hira is swinging a pretty hot bat right now. If they were able to put him on the roster and put him in the DH role for a few games, why couldn't he hit? You know, I don't know. That's just throwing something against the wall. But I was pretty impressed. He was hitting some shots up the gap. A couple of his outs were also very hard. He wasn't striking out like 40% of the time like he has in the past. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that Bly Madras is hitting. Winsel Perez has been hitting pretty well. There are some people doing okay down there. It's just, and I'll say this about Iowa. They have some pretty big arms, particularly in the bullpen. They have some really impressive pitchers. I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't feel like the Tigers are going to make any moves on offense until there's an injury, but, I don't know. You never know when the injuries can strike. That was, that's the other big topic all over the place. That's, you even have Tony Clark and the players union complaining about the pitch clock for reasons that are kind of beyond me. I don't know. It's weird. I Raj and I were talking earlier today about one of the most loathsome people on Twitter is popping up again. The pain guy, right? O'Leary, the guy who always pops up when people start getting injured and talking about how, this is prevented this by his poor mechanics or like just a charlatan. And it's always annoying when he pops up.
Man, that guy sucks. That guy sucks so bad. I mean, that guy. I really don't like that guy at all.
It's a bummer for baseball that Shane Bieber and Spencer Strider and Yuri Perez. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, that all these impressive pitchers are going down. But if guys are sitting, upper 90s with wicked breaking balls, it seems like it's bound to happen, right? It's just the way that pitching is now. And I saw Dr. James Andrews, talked about it, how the real problem is that velocity and spin is being promoted and valued at a very young age now. And so you're seeing Tommy John in high school all the time. And how the UCL isn't like fully formed until you're like 26. Which I don't know how you stop that though, right? It's
almost like there's an 18-month tax on if you want to become a pitcher in the pros. You got an 18-month tax you got to pay. You're going to sit out, and then you come back.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting point here, too, from David I wonder if the pitch clock affects Jay. I mean, bias at the plate. I know there's multiple reasons why his performance went down in the 2 years, so it makes him wonder.
I don't know. That would. It's always Javi tough.
Because... He seems like a momentum guy. I don't know how the pitch clock would. I mean, well, make him all of a sudden miss fastballs. Unless
the easy joke is it gets him back in the dugout faster, right? So, you know,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, we talked about it before. Like last year was Javi Baez's lowest strikeout rate ever. Like there's a lot going on there that I can't quite figure out. You know, it would be one thing if he was striking out 35% of the time and hitting the ball hard, but to make more contact and hit it less is just something that I never expected from him. But yeah, and Javi Baez there in the comments is mentioning the Tyler Glasnow clip you know, it makes sense to me too, where they got rid of the grip stuff and now he's, you know, wrenching on the ball as hard as possible. And that's, I've always heard before about how, you know, and he mentioned it in that clip, you're supposed to hold the baseball like an egg. Like yeah. You could throw an egg without breaking it. That's how you're supposed to throw it. And
you know, that to me, the rise in injuries tracks to the sticky stuff argument more than the pitch clock, I think. So I watched that Glasnow video too. And man, I was nodding along. It makes more sense to me as well. More than worrying about 18 seconds between pitches.
I look at it this way. I mean, if you look at, I was just watching Major League the other day, and when Eddie Harris is throwing Vagisil or boogers on the ball or whatever the case was, how often that was case was or it was happening, to add that velocity. Or I mean, Trevor Bauer with his Coke mixture, whatever he was using, yeah. Was it really harming the game? I mean, you know, I think I don't really think baseball, Major League Baseball, really knows what to do with this situation, because they try to remedy it, but it doesn't seem like it did nothing. It literally, I mean, if anything, you're gonna, what I mean is, it's just, it seems like just, it's when people freak out about it or have this, you know, big reaction over it, what happens? There's no, I don't know. I would love to see more scientific evidence of this. For all the science that baseball uses, we can't figure that part out. Am I missing something? I mean, it's just, we have all these math majors at the major league level running front offices, and they can't figure that out.
Well, I just don't understand. A couple of years ago, a bunch of American players, Joe Ryan was one of them, went over to Asia, right, to pitch. I forget if it was the World Baseball Classic or the Olympics or what the hell it was. And they were using a pre-tack ball over there, and they raved about it. Like this.
Yeah. It was the World Baseball. It was. Oh, I know you probably know the context you're talking about. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. And they were loving that baseball. And it makes sense to me. If the pitchers were going to be so much better off by, you know, quote unquote cheating with their, you know, hairspray and their suntan oil and whatnot else, sunblock, excuse me. If they had to resort to that, why they can't get a ball that it has enough grip where they don't have to cheat? Okay. I mean, like, that should not be that hard of a fix to dink around with a ball, test it in the minors, and there you go.
So they did. They tried a pre-tack ball in, I think, Double A a couple years ago and Triple A, and then last year they did it in the Southern League, they were not happy with the results. It was a lot more strikeouts, a lot more walks, a lot more wild pitches. It was something about the way the ball was moving after that, and I haven't heard anything more since then, which is annoying because.
And the thing is, that runs totally counter to the scientific process, right?
Yeah.
Try something else.
Yeah. So this one didn't work. Yeah, find something that's maybe a little bit different that can work, because yeah, it's I don't know, it's that seems relatively simple, right? Like you can find a ball surface that's gonna stick to your hands and not move 1,000 feet. But I don't know. I mean, who knows? They can't fix the jerseys right now, so
that's true. Touché.
Well, was there a situation in Milwaukee where they were supposed to use a certain jersey they got every Friday, and it was never shipped on time. It wasn't shipped on time. What a joke! Like, logistically speaking, There's no, what, 2-day shipping or overnight? Like, you just.
Yeah.
We know when the start of the season is almost 6 months in advance. It's not like it's snuck up on them.
Well, they were able to get Simo's jacket expedited and in there for opening day. You could get some regular baseball jerseys, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, those they had no problem getting those new Alan Trammell inspired caps, the 84, the Trammels, if you will. But, you know, fan merchandise, no problem. But player jerseys, I mean, that's not important at all. No, But let's preview the Pirates to see. It is strange the Tigers don't have an extended homestand. That was another thing I found really strange about the schedule this year, is they don't, they go off to Pittsburgh now from here. And the, like what somebody mentioned earlier, the Pirates are 7-2
or 8-2.
I'm sorry, 8-2. Let's put a little more respect than that. And the matchups go as follows: Olsen against Keller on Monday, tomorrow. Mize against Perez on Tuesday. And it's just a two-game series. And then they come back to play the Twins on Thursday. So they have an off day on Wednesday, which is really weird that they have an off day on a Wednesday.
Yeah, that's they do this forever with that weird like two game home and home with the Pirates. It just seems like that's, you know, extends back to when interleague play started. I don't know why they're always trying to make the Pirates and the Tigers rival
thing.
Maybe it's doing a favor for Jim Leland. I don't know.
Bitter rivals.
But yeah, it's, you know, both of these pitchers, I can picture the Tigers getting to both of them. I can picture both of those pitchers really annoying Tigers fans again, because Mitch Keller has always had really good stuff and not great results. He started getting it together last year a little bit. And then Martin Perez is a guy that I've never liked. He was a top prospect. He's never struck anybody out in his entire career, but somehow he's still stuck around forever. And it would just be annoying. Him shutting down the Tigers would be more annoying to me than Keller.
Yeah, the Tigers are lucky they're missing out on Jared Jones. He's pitched well his first two starts. Been pretty tough to hit, so he's on a roll. I'm glad somebody else has to be the one to try to break him of that.
There's one thing about a scene that Nolas Chapman's already throwing over 100 again pretty early on, too. So there's going to be, as far as Pirates goes, I'm trying to think of like just there is a couple of things. I mean, right now the biggest focus right now with the Pirates is Paul Skene's down in AAA. He's been doing not too bad. And as far as like offensive, what are the Tigers expecting from the Pirates offense? Guys, I'm looking. I was trying to think about like the regulars in the Pirates lineup. That I mean, I don't really pay attention a lot to the Pirates because, I mean, outside prospect wise, we have Altoona. But what's been anybody that you guys? I mean, they beat Baltimore today, so Baltimore's off to a slow start, 5-4. But I was trying to think. I mean, we have O'Neal Cruz, and they have Ronnie Tells at first base. I'm just trying to think of anybody else that's kind of like, outside of a Cruz, that really stands out.
Brian Reynolds,
Sawinski,
Joey Bart.
Some people like Sawinski's power.
True. So there four of those games against the 0-1 and 9 Marlins. Good point.
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't know. The Pirates have a kind of, you know, Henry Davis. I don't know if he's off to a great start or not. They were a little bit happier with his catching defense this year, I think. But, and you know, Cabrian Hayes is a terrific defender who's been a quality player, who has still never really had that huge offensive breakout, I think. I don't know. I mean, I'm not shaking in my boots about the Pirates, but you never know, right? With the way the Tigers are playing right now, and we could see a couple more low scoring games.
Yeah, you know, it's a two game series. They're on the road. If they've split it, I mean, you know, shrug and move on, right? I'd be fine with that.
I wasn't going crazy. I do remember the Tigers on Baseball Reference. It says they put up 6 runs on him in 4.2 innings last year.
Keller?
Perez?
Yes. Or no, Perez. Sorry.
I got you. Yeah.
Again, that's when he was with Texas. If you look at who hit him last year, Zach Short, Miguel Cabrera.
There you go.
As always, sample sizes, probably pitching matchups, but I don't matter that much.
So what are two? Okay. So I'll leave you guys with this question. So as far as pleasant surprises of the week or pleasant surprises so far this season, if you guys have, give me two pleasant surprises that are kind of like you didn't see that, expected that to happen with the Tigers.
Well, I haven't seen a lot of Shelby Miller over the years, and I've only really read about him. I just, you know, and I watched enough D-backs baseball, but I just never saw him much. He's looked pretty good. I'm pretty impressed. Pretty good start. And then, you know, we mentioned a little bit Colt Keith defensively. Looks the part for now. Again, 9 games, so we don't know a lot yet, but he hasn't embarrassed himself, so that's a good thing. And then on the minor league level, I just want to bring up, I saw Keiter Montero pitch 4 innings the other night. Looked pretty good. You know, he was 94, hit 96 once or twice on the stadium gun. He allowed 1 hit. That was the only hard hit ball. Nobody else even touched him. The outs were soft. So I was, you know, it was a short glimpse, 4 innings, but I was pretty impressed on a cold night with Keiter Montero. And Bo Brisky was also 96, 97, looked pretty good that night.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I think Keiter Montero is going to be more effective than when people – he's sleeping on some people. I really, really think that he's going to catch some more people off guard. What about you, Cameron?
Gio Urshela. I made a joke on Twitter earlier this week that Gio Urshela's actual good version of Harold Castro puts the ball in play a lot better than Harold Castro, plays better defense than Harold Castro. It's that meme where you show a picture of Harold Castro, someone presses the upgrade button, and then it's Gio Urshela. And I think he fits that role nicely. We need someone who can put the ball in play. I mean, everyone in this, even, well, Mark Canna doesn't have that high of strikeout rate, but really it's Mark Canna and Gio Urshela who have a sub 20% strikeout rate on their careers and can actually put the ball in play, get on base. So, yeah, hit and Gio. That's my surprise of the week.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It hasn't been a whole lot yet to really get surprised by. I guess Carson Kelly is off to a solid start. Yeah, I was going to pick Urshela too because I didn't think he was much of anything heading into the year, and he's been good there. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and to piggyback on you, down in the minors, I was happy to see that Hau Lee is off to a pretty hot start. I thought that the Tigers pushed him kind of aggressively to Double A because he didn't get. He wasn't great in high A last year, and he barely had any time with the Tigers or with the Whitecaps, but has a home run. I think he had a 3-hit game yesterday, another hit today. So that's good to see, you know, another bat in the system. There aren't a ton of hitting prospects there in Erie, but he's off to a nice start.
Yeah. My pleasant surprise has been the usage of Jason Foley in terms of how they've been using him and kind of going in there and, miles per hour, but increased the in addition to that, movement's been better on his pitches. So that's been a really pleasant surprise because even when they used Alex Lang on Friday to get the save because Chafin walked the first two batters, that had to be a slight confidence booster. But to know that Jason Foley's back there and kind of wipe out, like a wipeout guy, that's a comforting thing. As far as taking a cue from the minors, Wenciel Perez has been, and I know you guys have both said it, but Wenciel Perez continues to do very well bat and leadoff. He's been taking a really good approach at the plate. He's been an adventure in the outfield, to say, to be polite about that. But that is something, and by the way, another guy that was not necessarily pleasantly surprised a little bit, but Jaden Hamm, strong IA debut. And I was talking to Mark Rosh from the Days of the Roar podcast, and he was saying, well, the shadow's this. I'm like, dude, he still can pitch. And Madden, by the way, also 4 scoreless innings, 4 hitless innings, 12 up, 12 down, looked really good. And I was kind of surprised because there was kind of against a team like Harrisburg. I mean, Harrisburg has some good prospects on there. Dylan Cruz, they have a couple of guys that are in their top 30 on there, and Madden made it look easy.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, this isn't the minor league podcast, but when, you know, there's been some big stories down there. You know, today was Jackson Jobe's debut, and where he walked half the total that he did all of last year, which is, you know, that's just the way it goes. I think some people were right in speculating that maybe it was a little bit cold for him. He hasn't pitched in the cold like last year when he came up to West Michigan. It was middle of the season. But I'll just touch on this. Jose Briseño, who, you know, got a lot of, you know, publicity over the off season, and then hit that 111.7 mile an hour double in the spring breakout that got, you know, opened some eyes. He looks really good down in Lakeland. Like, he's only 2-for-9, I think, right now, but he's got 4 walks to 1 strikeout, and he's putting together like these like Juan Soto level plate appearances down there, where it's he'll get down 0-2 and then work like an 11 pitch walk.
Nice.
I mean, I think he's first baseman, but I don't. I think it probably won't matter actually, because I think he's hitting the ball really hard and looking at, like, I think he might force his way up to West Michigan by the middle of the season, just because his plate approach is too advanced for low A, which is something unusual to say in the system.
So between him, Campos, and Santana, who would you have at the top out of those three right now?
Briseño.
It's hard not to go with Briseño. Briseño, you know, Santana, I think, went like 1-for-9 again this week with a bunch of strikeouts. Campos did have a nice 2-run double today. It comes down to the approach, honestly. Like, just from watching, you know, he's been batting third or fourth, I think, every game.
And save more damage.
And it's just a really good approach. He did strike out pretty quickly against the lefty the other day. But other than that, I just think he's too advanced of a hitter for low A right now, which is kind of wild because he's only 19.
Yeah, I mean, it is good. It was good to see Campos with a hard hit double. It was good to see that, and there's some positive things you can take away from that. But I feel like Christian Santana's on borrowed time. I really believe that. I mean, I think if you look at this, some of the injuries right now in terms of where they at level wise, they, especially if Kreider's going down. I mean, next up is Corey Joyce, but possibly I'm not sure who's going to come up next, but it's still, there's a lot of like about Santana, but I think the leash is going to get shorter. If he can't get off to a good start, if he can't get out of Lakeland this year, then you have to move on. I'm sorry. It's just, as much as I want to be Mr. Positive about that, it's just the Tigers have to do something about it, and they probably will. But Briseño, man, it's just like, I just remember Jeff, when we had Jeff Ponce on originally, I was like, I don't know, he seemed like a backfield darling or something like that, and I'm like, are you sure about that? Now I think he's preaching the word of Briseño.
I'll say he looks like, we talked about it, you know, he's already a big kid. He actually looks leaner this year and more athletic, which is, you could, sometimes happens. I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm not going to plant my flag at him as a catcher, but like I said, I don't know if it'll matter because he hits the ball hard and he looks like he could be a real offensive player. So that's nice to see. Max Anderson's off a pretty good start in West Michigan, at least, you know, results wise. Luke Gold hit a homer. You know, we don't have to go through the entire minor league system right now.
Yeah, well, that's gonna be tomorrow's podcast.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I'll tell you who looked good for the Cubs, man. If you want to put some money on some stock, like Pete Crow Armstrong, I think that guy's going to be in Chicago this summer for sure. He hit a home run into the wind on a cold night. Had to be 50 feet over the fence. I mean, it was a bomb. It was impressive. He hit it off Devin Sweet. I don't know how impressive that is, but, you know, whatever. But he also covers a hell of a lot of ground in center field. Made a diving catch that was beautiful, and also made a running catch that I thought was a sure double up the gap by Dingler, and he ran it down with ease, kind of like Meadows does.
Yeah, I mean, he's another one of those guys who's going to, you know, it kind of comes down to how well he hits. But yeah, his speed, I saw him, you know, he got picked off and got out of it because he's just a havoc causing player. And yeah, so he'll be a fun one to watch. I've always had a little bit of a dislike for him ever since we heard that he trashed the opposing locker room or the opponent locker room in West Michigan, something like that. When he was frustrated, we were down there and Jackson Jobe made him look silly, but he's still a pretty young and athletic player. So it'll be fun to watch.
Somebody was asking how Peyton Graham's doing right now. He's got one hit on the season so far, so he's off to a slow start.
Had the hit was a hard line drive, but yeah, beyond that, he has also, I think, made an error at shortstop already. He's batting like eighth in West Michigan's lineup. But again, he's a guy that really, he just needs reps, man. He's been injured a lot, and so he hasn't played a ton. But I think...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah, if Corey Joyce does get called up to Toledo, then I would expect Danny Ceretti then to go from West Michigan to Erie, and then more playing time for Graham and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there was Luke Gold was playing first, right?
Did he? I don't know. I didn't notice that. Well, it's not
Luke,
a huge
Luke Gold, yeah, Luke Gold was trying to see if I could find that right, if I saw that correctly. Yeah, he's played two games so far at first base.
There you go.
Yeah, which makes kind of sense because they're not giving up a Campos in the outfield. So, but yes, there will be a minor league podcast. We'll be breaking this down tomorrow. I'll save your questions for minor league podcast with Brandon Day starting at with us at 9 o'clock tomorrow on the Tiger Miley Report channel. And so we'll be back on Thursday to preview the Twin series, and hopefully the Tigers at least take in one out of two, or maybe score five runs or more. That'd be great. That way people can relax a little bit, but again, it just feels, I gotta stay off Twitter. That's my problem. It's my own problem. It's my own fault. It's my own fault.
The good news is that the Tuesday game is at 12:30 in the afternoon. So that's a good way to spend your day. 12:30 Eastern, I should say.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. Tuesday, by the way. Yeah. Tuesday I'll be out in Erie for the home opener, and Chris will be, are you going to be in West Michigan Tuesday?
I should be. Yeah. Unless something strange comes up.
So we're splitting duties this year. I go and Chris goes west.
You're going to get Troy Melton, I think. Yeah. I don't know who I'm getting.
Yeah, you might be getting, I don't know, it's good, but we'll talk more about that tomorrow.
Yeah.
So join us on the minor league podcast. Thanks to everybody. Please subscribe, like, and subscribe our channel if you haven't already. I got in a better habit of that. So please like, subscribe our Motor City Metrics channel and the Tiger Minor League Report. This year, I want to get to a goal. I want to get to 5,000 subscribers, guys. I mean, we haven't pushed that narrative enough. So please subscribe. And if you want to donate, there is a donate button. Our PayPal link is on our website, in our show description. Or you can go to our Twitter at Tigers ML Report, and you'll find that there. And there's that's the GoFundMe. And then we have a PayPal link you can donate. So thanks so much. We'll see you tomorrow on the minor league side of things. Have a good evening, everybody.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.